Volk. I grew up on a farm at Linton, North Dakota, and I joined the Navy in 1943. And I went there, I went to Fairbanks, Idaho. And there I got transferred in the Marine Corps at Camp Pendleton, by Oceanside, California, and trained as a communications man with the Marines. And then our first, well, went to Hawaii for more training. And the first invasion I went on was Iwo Jima. And our job, 5 sickle men and 5 ready men, in which I was in charge. We were the first ones on the beach before anybody else. So we had 30,000 Japanese on the island, and us 10 Americans and the U.S. Navy and Marines behind us. So we had to tell them, everything is clear to come in. And usually, the enemy will not do anything until more men get on the beach. And then they forced, they start landing thousands of Marines. And when they were on there, Japanese opened up their artillery in the hills, laid it down, and killed thousands of them. And there's nothing you can do. You're just standing there on the beach or the sand. There's no place to hide. And I was there, I would say, a week or 10 days, and went out for a rest on the ship and come back. It was another week. And another probably, I think, was my worst experience because of all the people that got killed. You could walk 50 yards on the beach and just go on bodies, so many dead Marines. And then I was right below Masabachi when they raised that flag. You've seen it on the television many times. I remember a big cheer went up with the island and all the ships blew their horns. Then we were designed just for an invasion. And when everything was established, we went back to the ship, and then the Marines fought the rest of the battle. And there, we went back and done more training. And we were supposed to hit Okinawa. And in the process, along the beach before we landed, a suicide plane hit the ship, sank the ship. And we were swimming around the water until we got picked up. Never did get on the island of Okinawa. And after that battle, I went back to the States, and we replenished everything in my ship. Then we were supposed to invade Japan. I remember they gave everybody a week off to set because the casualties there were supposed to be horrendous. And while we were at Japan reloading, that's when the atomic bomb was dropped. And we still got on the ship, went over to Japan, and had a regular invasion. But we didn't know what they would do. We landed there just like a regular invasion. Secured the beaches, secured our foothold, and there again. After that was done, we went back out. There's a lot in between, but that's kind of the sequence, the way things went.
Tell us about your experience and how this operated from your radio communications duties.
See, we were part of a staff that went with different Marine divisions. So we would go from one ship to the next, depending what ship was going to do the invasion to carry the troops. So I was 4 different troop ships, different kinds, where the VP boats were on these troop ships. And then during an invasion, we put the VP boats that probably carried maybe 25, 30 men over the side, and the men went over the side of the ship, went in the VP boats. They went in the beach and dropped the front end out and run ashore. So we would never know what ship, the name ship we'd be on until the time come to make the invasion. They would assign us to a ship.
Let's talk about where you came from originally and how you entered military life.
I was born and raised on a farm south of Linton, North Dakota. And my parents and I were the only ones on the farm. And I didn't know this, but my dad had gotten me a farm deferment. So I went into the office and found out why I wasn't drafted to go to service. And they said, well, you have a deferment. So when I found that out, I then went to the Navy volunteer to go. I didn't want the farm deferment. And that's how I got in. And I think it's probably the smartest thing I've done my entire life for several reasons. Number one, if I'd have stayed on the farm during the war, I'd have probably never got off the farm. Number two, I'd have never got a college education because I got the GI Bill of Rights. Number three, even if I would have had the opportunity to go to school, I wouldn't have had the ambition to do it or the guts to do it. Because when you grow up in an environment that I did, you just did no heck of a lot, you know. So after what I went through in the military, and with the Marines and whatever, all the combat, you got to me, I got to the point that there's nothing I can't do. If I can survive that, I can survive anything, you know. So I just tackled anything, everything. I went to college, graduated. I started my own business, very successful. And I'd have never done that without the military background because that's where I got my confidence and drive, which I didn't even know existed, or that I had until I got to these horrendous obstacles that either you've done it right and survived or you're dead. And I thought, hey, if I can do that, I can do it.
So your experience in the military helped shape your life?
Completely. Completely. And for the better, not for the worse, for the better.
But
well, the propaganda of Tokyo Rose, basically what you'd say, your girlfriend is at home, or your parents or your mother's crying and wish you were home, and basically to demoralize you. But in between, they played the best big band modern music the U.S. ever had, you know. Now, where they got it from, I don't know. But it was, in between the music, it was a kind of demoralizing deal. When we invaded Okinawa, she'd say, you're going to get on the beach, and you know what, you might get killed. This kind of thing. It just, you kind of, now what she ever thought, or the propaganda machine, what good would that do? Because hey, you were going to go, you were going to go in there, and no matter what she said, you're going to fight for your life. That's basically what you did. See, in wartime, in combat, you either kill or be killed. And you're going to go kill as many people as are in front of you. And that's because you want to survive, not because you hate people. You don't hate the guy ahead of you. He never done anything wrong with you. But you kill him because so he doesn't kill you. So Tokyo Rose would say all she wanted. That was one in one ear, out the other. The music was wonderful. So, and the ship went down. It's a suicide plane hit it. Now, whether completely, we were relatively close to the beach to unload troops to go ashore, these VP boats. So the VP boats were over the side to load troops. But when that suicide plane hit, well, then there's a abandoned ship. And of course, some of them went in VP boats over rope ladders over the side. And some of them jumped over the side with life jackets on. because you never know if the ship's going to sink, because if it does, and you're too close to it, it kind of sucks you under, you know. So you float around there and hope somebody will pick you up. And well, you're just a pebble on the beach. Nobody slows down. There's a few guys swimming around in the water because they can't afford to, because they might be a target, you know. So slowly, whether our ship got completely sunk or not, that I will never know. I know I lost everything I had, except the clothes in my bag. And then we were transported into another ship. We went aboard that, but that by that time our group was kind of broke up in splinters, so actually couldn't make an organized landing. So we were pulled off of that in the landing process. Dangerous, and actually it wasn't that dangerous, because before the invasion you had the ships, the destroyers, the cruisers, the battleships, and the Air Force would bomb an area from the beach in quite a ways to clear it out of enemies. So when you went in, the first ones in, there was nobody around. They started moving back into the area after the troops landed. But that's why they tried to put the troops in real quick and get established before they regroup and come back out toward the beach. So, strange as it might seem, even though we were the first ones on the beach, it wasn't dangerous because there's nobody around. We're standing here all by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the Marines come in. Well, by that time, while the Japanese started coming back on towards the beach again, that's when the battle started. But usually the battle right off the bat, the Americans, they lost more troops because we weren't dug in, we had no place to hide. Whereas the Japanese, they had 50 years to prepare their defense, you know, land and dig in and caves and pill boxes. And those pill boxes you didn't know existed until you got into the woods. And then you had to call planes and rockets, try to bust them up, you know, and get at them. So usually the first day, first couple of days was tough until you got conquered in a little bit. Got more troops and got tanks and got this and got that. And of course, after that took place, well, our job was over. And we got pulled out. Five regiment and five signalmen. Signalmen, you know what I'm talking about. They're the guys with the flags. So when the real battle started, we got pulled out. But we were not trained so much to fight, we were just trained to get establish a beachhead by communication, not by fire. But we had guns, I mean, we're ready. Hey, if you had to defend yourself, you defended yourself. We were the marksmen. These other guys didn't know what a gun was. And of course, we knew how to survive. In the 30s, you on the farm, you better know how to survive. We could lay in the ditch and lay in a foxhole with hardly very little to eat. So what? Well, the other guys lay bellyache about different things, you know. That's what I was just talking about, these women here. You adjust. The quicker you adjust, the safer you are, the better you are. If you don't adjust, you're going to be miserable. In some cases in combat, you're going to be dead. You don't know about it, but you're going to die if you don't adjust. So, like I say, the experience, every success, every education, the success in business, in life, that I had, 100% because of the military, of the training that I had. Not of shooting and whatever have you, but the guts, the willing to go forward, the willing to take a chance, the will to accomplish, conquer. I used to tell my son, I have a son, when you go into business or you get a job, don't set your sights too high, because if you don't make to the top, you fall down, you fall so hard you don't try it again. such a side to highways up the hill, get established, and take the next climb up the hill and get established. That's how you get to the top. You do it all at once. It's like in the military. If you think you're going to over that island in one day, you're dead. But you take step by step with backup, you're going to make it eventually the top. That's the lesson I learned in the military. And that's the lesson I learned they got a school, I worked for the government, and I said, hey, this is no place for me because promotion in the government is by the length of service, not by what you do. And I started my own fertilizer business. And everybody said, you're crazy, you'll never make it. Well, if I don't, I won't, but I can say I made a chance, I took a shot at it. Because of the brutalism of the conqueror, I was successful. Well, a lot of other guys in the same time, for the same business, went belly up. But some guys can't handle pressure. Like my wife, when I sold out after 20 years, she said to me one morning, she said, for the young many years we've been in business, it's the first time you didn't talk in your sleep. About business, you know, so you worry about it. Plan. And that's, to me, that's the military. That's all plan and move, plan and move. And that's how you do business. You plan and move ahead. Slowly, but cautiously, you're going to make it. And you made up your mind, how do I get there? Well, you might call it mud, you eat K rations, and pretty soon you get there. And you have a lesson back in your head, and then you go out and take another job, which is not in the military. And you say, how do I get there? You say to yourself, the same day way as I got there before. By pushing, by clawing, by scratching, you'll make it. In the process, in the military, you probably kill a few people, you had to. You don't have to deal with civilian life, but you're going to push them aside and move ahead. If you don't, you're going to be with the rest of the troops behind you. I say today you cannot, the United States cannot fight a war because you've got television cameras on your back. And a war is to kill or be killed. And if you have civilians ahead of you and they're in your way and you've got someplace to go, you've got to get out of your way. The only way you're going to get out of your way is to get rid of them. And you can't do that today because you take pictures of that, too many people, that's too brutal. And so, war is brutality. I mean, when it kills us, nobody pats himself in the back by killing a bunch of women and kids and stuff, but hey, either you or them, make up your mind. Now, you can be a hero and get killed, and they can bury you, and they walk around it, but not this kid. Nowadays, why they're there with television cameras say, you shouldn't have done that. What do you mean you shouldn't have done that? I was there to win a war, so I had to kill the guy ahead of me. If I don't do it, he kills me. I have to do it. Not that I like to do it, but I have to do it. Now, after World War II, there was the Korean War. Then there's the Vietnam War. We never won either one, did we? Why? Because you're fighting them on television. You're doing the same thing today. We're over there. You got Marines being court-martialed. I can just see these guys going into a house and maybe there's shots fired from that house. They break in and let's say two or three women in there. Well, who do you think shot? That is shot from a block away. Somebody in that house, there are three in the house, one is women, right? So what do? You get rid of them, right? Did he get court-martialed? No. Well, that's no war. That's what they want to fight, they stay out of there.
Tell us about your example of the Marines and the civilians.
Well, the civilians were told to come behind the lines, and in the process, there's a bunch of Marines in foxholes. And as they went through there, A woman went by, she had a grenade under her arm, and she opened her arm and dropped the grenade, and the foxhole killed 3 Marines. They would just open up and level them off. We wouldn't do that today, because the television would be sitting there, take a picture of that. They don't, the reporters forget that 3 guys were dead in here, 3 Americans. Forget about that. They show you pictures of what you're doing, not what somebody else did to them.